Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, December the 11th, 2009. The snow flies, and so does the corn market. We'll find out if this week's higher close can be sustained into the end of the year and beyond today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Dan Bossi of Ag Resource Company out of Chicago, Illinois. Our panelists in studio today are Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson from Champaign, Illinois, and on the phone line with us from his office in Lafayette, Indiana, is Global Commodity and Analytics Consulting's Mike Zuzulo.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Well, let's start our discussion with this question this afternoon. The locks and the dams on the upper Mississippi River begun to close. There's corn in the field and snow on the ground. In your mind, Kurt Kimmel, what's the most important factor at play in the corn market today?
Well, that's a good question, and you probably get 100 different answers asking 100 different people, but we feel probably the investment money, the flow of the money coming in and coming out of the market. We feel that's probably going to be the main factor as the over fundamental picture is pretty well dialed in. I don't know if you can change the fundamental supply-demand balance sheet a whole lot right at the present time.
Jackie Banks?
Well, I can't disagree with Kurt. I think that if you looked at the action early in the week, you could certainly see the impact of the outside markets, the crude oil action and the higher dollar action, just an overall concern about the economies across the world. And so I think until we get a little more stable in that area, we're going to see a lot of movement in the corn market based on what the outside markets do.
And Mike Zuzulo.
Yeah, the Commission House buying was reported on Friday, Todd, and like Kurt said, the index funds are gearing up, and that's what the trade psychology started to talk about again. I wonder, though, if the trade psychology would have pushed the idea of index fund buying, given what Jackie's talking about in the outside markets, had it not been for that Western Corn Belt blizzard. I think that really lent some support to the market, and especially at the end of the week, we saw the cash basis for corn come up, and we also saw a lot of spread unwinding in the wheat and the corn spread. I think it moved about 36 cents just on Friday alone.
Well, tell me more about how you see that winter storm and what it did to the marketplace, Mike.
Well, I'm really glad we've got Dan as a guest today because he's got a very good understanding of what goes on out there, especially in the Western Corn Belt. Better than most, I think. And I guess my perception has been that there is going to be some field losses, that it can be substantial, maybe as much as 500 million bushels because of the storm track. But a lot rests on whether we stay cold and stay frozen, and it allows the Northern Plains, the Northern Corn Belt guys to get back in the fields relatively soon, or if we would thaw out and get real mucky again and have a lot of freezing and thawing over the next 30 days, then that keeps the corn in the fields and more losses accrue.
Is he right? Are we talking about a half a billion bushel out there that could be lost, do you think?
Well, I think that if you look at the pundits, we'd have to guess that there was 1 to 1.3 million acres or million bushels still sitting out there. Sorry about that. And I don't know if I'm in the camp that we could lose that much, but I certainly do think a 20 to 30% loss wouldn't be out of the picture. The biggest problem that I see, even if guys can get some harvesting done right now, drying is just not, you know, if you try to dry corn at this time of year, you're going to split the kernel open. The biggest difficulty that we have across the belt is the lack of ability to be able to get this corn in and get it dried. We've just never had a situation where everything needed to be dried.
Yeah, so just to clarify, a 20 to 30% loss of what's left standing in
that's
the field.
Right. Right? That's right. Okay. Sorry about that.
I don't think anybody would have not gotten that, but I wanted to make sure everybody did. I've got another question. She brought up drying and getting a crop dried. Is there concern at all that with cold weather taking not its time now, but coming into the United States, as it usually does, although it looks like we're going to maybe have the coldest December that we've had for a while, is there any concern that fuel supplies, natural gas and propane, might dry up for those things that aren't as important? For instance, it would be important to heat a house, but not necessarily to dry a corn crop.
Well, that's a good question. And we've already had shortages in some areas. There's been some delays. It's been a push to keep the infrastructure moving here, moving product around. I'd love to maybe see the trade get excited about that. We've been optimistic natural gas futures, and finally they popped up here this week. So, but when you look at the big picture here, the marketplace isn't really concerned about it just right at the moment.
Well, one of the things that surprised me this week, right here in Illinois and in Iowa both, is we've had clients who have been telling us that they're on natural gas dryers. They've been asked to not do any drying from 6 until 9 in the morning because that's the largest demand time when furnaces kick back in. And some of the larger elevators in northern parts of Illinois have actually been told they should not be drying any corn overnight because of natural gas issues. And so I think you're right on track. We just haven't had this type of a circumstance.
Mike Zuzlo, is this something you've been watching as well?
Yeah, and I think, you know, from a bigger picture perspective, Todd, if you look at the natural gas, it's been the stepchild in the trade, and it's finally bottomed. And I think that's not only due to the dollar switching gears, but I think it's also due to this EPA change on CO2. A lot of the electricity generation, coal-fired plants are going to have to move very, very quickly to get natural gas and convert it into natural gas for their electricity generation. So we may have a very strong low in the natural gas market, especially if we stay cold this winter. And given this corn demand, drying demand we've had for propane and natural, that would lend support as well. So I'm recommending folks that haven't done anything on their winter propane, if the cash basis hasn't gone crazy yet, go ahead and get some locked in at this point.
December corn, by the way, this week had a high of $3.91. It's low at $3.63 3/4, and managed to put a hook up in the marketplace on the charts. $3.89 1/4 was the settlement price, up 15.5. December 2010 corn, $4.38 1/4 settlement price, up 13.75. Kurt, it had that nice little hook up in the marketplace there, too. What does it mean to you technically?
Well, technically it's positive. There's just a few hours to trade the December futures. We got Sunday night and till noon on Monday, then it goes off the board. But technically we went down to some price objectives that quite a few of the analysts were looking for, bounced off of it. Now we're sort of in a position to put in some retracements back up to some highs here. March corn closing above $4, sort of suggests maybe we try that 410, 415 level.
It was kind of interesting. Above $4, it was at 404. That's where crop insurance was. As I mentioned, I think on Friday afternoon with Mike, it means not a whole lot, but it just happens to be the
right
same
there.
Spot. So I want from maybe Mike, and then we'll go back through Jackie and Kurt too. Tell me what you think the marketplace will do with corn. We talked about outside markets a little bit. We haven't talked about the dollar very much as the outside influence or the index funds yet. Natural gas, of course. And then we've got, along with the natural gas, we've got a whole lot of crop we've got to dry that is either in the field still coming in to the marketplace or in the bin that probably will come out and still has to be dried. So, Mike, given all of that, what do you think happens between now and January? Oh, let's go with the USDA's mid-January reports. What happens between now and then? Because usually it changes about time USDA comes out with that January report.
Right. I think Kurt's point about the technicals, about that, and your point about the hookup really gives a lot of emphasis to the technical traders. And I guess I feel like that maybe the March can get up to that 420 to 430 level, Todd. But at that point, to be able to keep moving up, then it's going to need and have to rely upon beans. It's going to have to rely upon the cash basis, and it's going to have to rely upon those outside markets for it to be able to sustain that price level, especially after those January numbers come out. I guess when I think of the 163 yield that USDA gave us on this week's report, and trying to factor in the snowstorm and trying to say, okay, maybe the yield isn't going to get much bigger than 163, what is an overvalue or an inefficient price for March corn? And the numbers I'm crunching would say you get above 420, you're really putting a lot of premium in the futures market at that point, especially if you don't have the beans leading and the cash basis firm and the crude oil especially leading you or helping you and supporting you.
We'll come back to the beans in a moment, but between now, Jackie Vakes, and USDA report in January, where do you see the marketplace? We've got a 420 bid at the top at the moment.
Well, I'm more optimistic than Mike, I guess. I'm looking at 438 for a top end. And if we end up in a circumstance where we have the outside markets being crude oil positive, index fund money coming in, I wouldn't be surprised if we push the 450 level. You know, now whether or not that's going to be reflected in cash returns, that's a different story. But I think on the futures, it's very possible. Look what happened today when we went through some of the technical numbers. We went through the 10-day moving average, the 20-day moving average, and it was just like wild.
Yeah, but I will stop you there. Crude oil, below 70 bucks on the day, though, as it finished up on the trade.
Oh, I know. I know. And I think when you looked at today's trade, it definitely had divorced itself from the outside markets. The American dollar or the U.S. dollar was higher. Crude oil was lower. I think some of that is pent-up buying. They were sitting back. We had extremely low volume up until we got to the USDA report yesterday.
Okay, Kurt, so I've got a 420, a 438 to 450, possibly on the outsides. Chance, by the time we get to USDA's report for corn, what do you think?
420, 450, $5.
We're just going to bid it all up?
Really? I've got a pot. Wait a second. Do I actually have a positive set of crews, a whole crew that's positive in studio with me and on the phone line? Is that right?
You're well, going positive? Home Friday, it's optimistic. We're going to see some recovery. We'll just have to play it day by day. But you can come in here Sunday night, Monday morning, see some explosion in some country and be a whole different ball game. But probably in the corn, in the same line but a little difference, probably the biggest emphasis would probably be improving basis here over the near term. We've seen basis break hard here over the last 30 days, but now with harvest pretty well at standstill, for areas that still can move corn and areas that need corn, we feel the biggest play as a producer is probably in the basis.
Really? So tell me how it's going to pull – how you think that will happen?
Well, as long as I've been in the business – every time a guy fills up a bin of corn or pays minimum storage, I can't get himself the next day. And there is still pent-up demand out there that needs to be fulfilled. And so there are, we feel, therefore, here, as we go into next year in here, the basis is going to have to be firmed up to shake this stuff
I want to play devil's advocate on you. So you haven't been able to get them to move corn out of the bin. But have they ever put corn into the bin at 24%, 25%? I mean, are we going to have to move it? Are you really sure this is going to happen that way?
Well, they'll be quick to move it before spring. But that there's been already a lot of corn move already on fears of putting it in the bin. In fact, a lot of this last crop has been sold coming right out of the field.
Yeah, so your idea here is that if it needed to be moved, it's probably already moved and what's in the bin is in good condition. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah. Now, there are some guys wait until January 2nd here after the first of the year and go to the field, get it out so they don't pay minimum storage, too.
You look like you want to tell me something.
Well, I'm just sitting here thinking about, you know, the whole situation is the USDA is going to treat all of the corn that they really haven't, that hasn't been harvested yet, as if it's in the bin already. You know, and so when you come right down to it, the guys up in North Dakota, what's the likelihood that they're going to get any more of it out? You know, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And the other side of it is Kurt's talking about basis improvement. You know, and if you look at the potential for basis improvement and you've made sales, I just went to a Minneapolis Grain Exchange seminar yesterday about the cash index, and we've picked up a substantial amount of open interest in those contracts, and they track so close to what the actual basis is, even though it's a conglomeration of all the elevators from across the U.S. that they're bringing in. The majority, of course, come here from Illinois and Iowa. It's a great opportunity for a farmer to take advantage of that if he has to make a sale. You know, if he had to sell it out of the field, he could buy the basis contract, the cash index contract.
We have only a minute and a half left in the front end of this program to talk about soybeans, so be very short. Mike Zuzulo, very quickly, you said it needs to lead if you're going to go above 420. What has to happen?
Well, I think the processor and the exporter is going to start fighting each other again on limited supplies, Todd. What Kurt was talking about in corn, I think, is the exact opposite in beans. There's not a lot of beans in farmers' hands. They're not going to sell a lot at this point before springtime. And so if the beans are going to show themselves to be a bullish commodity, they need to do it now before the South American psychology and before the Chinese psychology turns negative.
And I think no matter how you look at it, the whole bean scenario is still based on China.
Yeah, I agree. China, as long as they don't cancel, and based is the weather patterns in the southern hemisphere once the calendar turns 2010.
I bet we take more up on the beans when we come back in just a couple minutes. We'll talk with Dan Bossi. He's with Ag Resource Company out of Chicago, Illinois. In studio with us today, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Jackie Vakes with Stuart Peterson from Champaign, Illinois. And Mike Zuzlow is on the phone line. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. You are listening, of course, to Commodity Week. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, your host. We'll be back shortly.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Winter bared its fangs across the Midwest this week with heavy snow and the much colder weather that followed. Fortunately, the heavy snow was limited to northwestern and northern Illinois, but the entire state was affected by the high winds and cold weather. After a moderately cool start to the week, the arrival of Arctic air on Wednesday turned things around quickly. Temperatures fell all day Wednesday as the massive storm over the Great Lakes pulled the cold air southward. By Thursday morning, temperatures were in the single digits in central Illinois and in the lower teens south. Over the snow cover in northwestern and northern Illinois, morning temperatures dropped below zero in some places. On Thursday, temperatures struggled into the teens despite sunshine during the day. That's running about 20 degrees below normal. Thanks to the storm, precipitation was well above normal this week. For the southern two-thirds of Illinois, almost all of the precipitation fell as rain on Tuesday and Tuesday night, while a wintry mix of precipitation fell in the northern third of the state. After moderating temperatures this weekend and on Monday, it looks like another blast of cold air will be poised to sweep through Illinois on Monday night and Tuesday. The system may be preceded by some light rain showers on Sunday and Monday, then followed by some snow showers on Tuesday. That should be about it for the week as far as precipitation is concerned. Temperatures will remain below normal until next weekend. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
I'm Todd Gleason. This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, December the 11th, 2009. Our panelists in studio today, Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson out of Champaign, Illinois, and Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois. Mike Zuzlow is on the phone line from his office in Lafayette, Indiana. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. And on our other phone line, the Vice President of Ag Resource in Chicago, Dan Bossi. Good afternoon to you, Dan. Thanks for taking the time to spend with us today.
Oh, you're very welcome, Todd. Nice to be with you.
I have a 420, a 438 to 450, and, well, I don't know whether I'll count that $5 on the top end for the corn, but I got that bid there, too. What do you see in the corn market?
Well, I'm glad that Jackie, Kirk, and Mike are so confident. I'm a little less confident, and in fact, I don't want to be punting here, but I think there's a lot of variables at play in these grain markets, and for that matter, ag markets, that make the next 4 weeks rather difficult. Fundamentally, we're just having a hard time here gandering up much of a bullish outlook for any of this stuff, but I do have these money flows which hit us from day to day, as we've seen in the last couple of days in corn. They come and go. Some of it, I think, is a little pre-positioning on the rebalance, if you will, from index funds, and I also have all the uncertainty out of the government and CFTC. This afternoon, the House passed a OTC bill, a regulatory bill against the financial industry, and so there's just a lot of balls in the air, and I think how they all fall is going to be difficult to forecast, at least until we get into the middle of January.
Mike, you have a question for him?
Dan, on the blizzard, I've been eager to ask you, what do you see as far as potential crop damage and lost bushels in case we can't get into the fields for, say, the next 3 weeks in those states that were under the blizzard conditions?
You know, Mike, maybe I've farmed in Wisconsin too long and I've harvested too much corn in January and February as a young man, but we're putting the losses somewhere between 25 and 55 million bushels by our surveys. We had people already in some of the northern Dakotas going today, and so I'm not all that pessimistic with the kind of open forecast we have for the next couple of weeks that a fair portion of this crop won't make it in. And I do think as we harvest this crop, a lot of it will go just across the scales. I think farmers are just anxious to let it go rather than look at putting it into storage. And the other good news that we're finding today is that the moisture content, it looks like these very cold temperatures has caused a couple of the percentage drop in seed moisture, and so that'll help on the drying side of it. So we would imagine where you don't have snow greater than 24 inches, and there's not many places like that in the Midwest, that combines will be back at it starting this weekend and continuing throughout much of the next 10 days.
Let's move over to beans. See, we didn't talk about beans very much. What's your outlook, Dan, as far as China and their involvement? Do you see them continuing to buy as heavy as they are right now?
Well, Jackie, they seem to be buying our U.S. beans on basis. They're not fixing price. They're buying them on basis contracts because they like to have forward supply on the books. We're fearful if relationships in South America start to change in February or March, and I do believe the Brazilian harvest soybeans will start somewhere around the middle of January. We'll have a 500,000 tons coming out of Mato Grosso and Goiás. And then we may have 3 to 4 million metric tons coming out in February. This is going to be an early harvest down there, that there will be some switching. We think maybe as much as a million, million and a half tons will be switched from the United States to Latin America on basis depreciation. So the Chinese are taking a little different track. I think they're going to get a case of indigestion when all of this stuff shows up at port over the next 3-4 weeks. But for the moment, Chinese crush margins are still positive, though retreating much like they are here in the United States.
Dan, you mentioned Washington and policy. My question would be, what's your thoughts on, talking to some cattle producers out west? They're still concerned that we're going to see some type of legislation or passage on carbon credit and tax, and calves be taxed $50 and cows $100. Do you see that coming to reality?
I think Washington's plate is full with health care and a few other things, including regulatory issues in the financial industry and more help for the banking industry. I think if it does come, it won't be until middle or later part of 2010. And I think there's probably enough resistance at the moment that some of those issues you mentioned would be tabled or cast aside. I just don't think this carbon trading issue, which Farm Bureau estimates would plant some 70 million acres of trees, is going to be received very well, and I'm having great difficulty with it. But, you know, first things first, let's see if we can get health care and some of these other issues through and where we kind of go from there.
Come back to the commodities directly for corn and soybeans, if you could, for me. I'm wondering, when you look at the marketplace for corn, how you see, and you talked about moisture content coming down. I think 19% was the last thing I heard coming out of the field today. How do you see that corn coming into the marketplace, whether it's in the bin already or still yet to come into the system from the field? How long does it take us to get that final, as of last week, 15% or so out of the field? Will we do it in 2 weeks, or will it take a whole month?
I think it'll take 3 weeks. We're kind of telling clients it'll take us some 2.5 to 3 weeks to get everything finally out, and I don't think we'll get it all out, Todd. There's going to be some people that just decide to store corn until sometime in March or April, and I'm not saying it happens every year, but there may be 3 to 4% that's just the way it is. I wonder if NASA is going to give us or continue to give us these harvest reports once we get beyond, let's say, 91 or 92%. So we'll all be left guessing anyway. But I think there will probably be 700 to 800 million bushels of corn, which probably will come to this market by the first of the year. And again, I think two-thirds of that may be sold across the scales, which the pipelines in corn is less full than beans and may give us a little basis pressure, I think, as we head into the tax season.
Yeah, Iowa NAS told us last week in their Tuesday report, audio report to us, that this was their last weekly and that we would go to the monthlies from this point for them.
That's what we're all anticipating. I just don't think they have the funding to keep doing these programs or these estimates week by week.
Mike Zuzlo.
Dan, on that first question Todd asked you, I don't want to read it between the lines, so I ask you openly, do the index funds in your mind really need to come in and buy commodities, or has the inflation landscape kind of changed with the dollar and the bonds and the way the gold and the crude have acted since the 1st of December?
My clients in New York still want to get smaller in their exposure to commodities, and I think that will persist as we head into the holidays. I believe somewhere between Christmas and New Year's there may be stability or a reason why people want to position for this rebalance. Though I'm a little, after watching the markets in the last couple of days, I'm wondering if some are starting to go earlier than we're thinking. By that I'm saying selling crude, selling some other things that they've made money on and coming back and buying corn and some of these commodities where they haven't made money. So I wouldn't be surprised that some people are trying to jump the gun on the index fund side, and that may be what's propping us up here in the short term.
What do you think is going to be the range, Dan, for the American dollar, let's say, between now and the end of January?
Jackie, I think for all of us in commodity land, that's one of the hardest questions. I worry a little bit that as we're seeing money supply growth start to slow in China and they're pulling back on their loan origination, that the Chinese may not have the same kind of economic strength we've looked at in the last couple of quarters. So sometime in the first quarter, I think the Chinese will slow down as maybe the Indians will. If the U.S. Economy starts to show a little more stability, I wouldn't want to say upside vigor, but stability in the employment numbers, it's conceivable that this dollar could hold or even rally from where we're at. I remind people that if you're bearish the dollar, you're also kind of bearish the Chinese yuan or renminbi, since it is pegged. And I think as you get down to some of these levels, I question whether there's a lot of downside potential in the greenback, at least over the next month or two.
Dan, what's your favorite trade as we go into 2010?
I actually kind of like the meal market being short. We are now crushing for oil. No one seems to be having any trouble making high-pro 48% meal. I look at the world landscape. This is going to be one of the only years in which the U.S., Brazil, and Argentina will produce record-large soy crops. And when I then couple that with smaller livestock interest and expansion in DGGs, I kind of have this opinion that meal will be the downside leader in the complex, and that to a lesser degree, it'll also weigh on the complex as we go forward. So short meal or short meal long oil is one of our favorites here right now.
Finally, the folks at Smithfield seem to think that there should be 3% to 5% fewer animals out there in terms of hogs. You agree with them, and who do we lose in that process?
Well, we're not quite as optimistic as 3 to 5. We're kind of in a 2 to 4, 2 to 3 range right now, Todd. Sow slaughter rates haven't been keeping up to where I'd like to see them, and I'm a little concerned today about losing some of that Russian pork demand, which we need desperately. So I think we are looking at a smaller hog herd, but I'm not sure it's the 5% we'd like to think about heading into the end of the year.
Dan, thanks so much.
Have a good day.
Dan Bossi is with Ag Resource Company out of Chicago, Illinois. You can visit them online at agresource.com. Now a final word from our panelists. We'll start with Mike Zuzolo in Lafayette, Indiana.
We're going to continue to start selling a little bit at a time on the 09 corn, Todd, as we go above that 405 level in the March futures.
He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. Jackie Vex is with Stuart Peterson.
I'd like to say, you know, stay on top of your bases. That's probably one of the most important things there is right now, especially if you have to make sales before the end of the year.
And Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities.
Hope everybody has a safe, enjoyable holiday season.
And that is Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.